Thanks for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. Do you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to? Either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We'd love to hear from you, so connect with us today.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to the Up Your Brave show here on Reality Check Radio. I'm your host, Natalie Cutler-Welsh, and I'm so thrilled today to be talking to Megan McNamara on the topic of trusting your intuition and going against the grain. Welcome to the show, Megan.
Hi, Natalie. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're very accustomed to going against the grain, a mandated nurse. You're involved in the River of Freedom movie, which we're going to get into. But where are you right now geographically?
I am in Wellington at the moment. I just arrived a couple of days ago to attend the High Court hearing with Sue Gray and Mary Byrne from Fluoride Free New Zealand, who were taking the, on behalf of the Hastings, people of Hastings, arguing against the Hastings District Council fluoridating the water. So that was just a couple of days ago. So I attended that to live stream it and make sure that people that follow us know what's going on.
Well, I'll be sure to share that out. So definitely keep us posted on the outcome of that. And you might elaborate a little bit more on that today in our interview. For those of you that don't know Megan, Megan was a passionate mental health nurse until she was mandated out of her position as a clinician at the Child, Adolescent and Family Emergency MH team in Christchurch. She had 13 years experience as a nurse in Melbourne, helping people make informed choices about their mental health treatment, including providing information about medications and possible adverse reactions and the right to refuse medications. Good on you. She has worked with the Melbourne University as a graduate and postgraduate MH nurse educator at St. Vincent's Health, providing education to clinical staff and students regarding MH and recovery, basic life support, and de-escalation of unwell and aggressive patients. So I know there's a lot in your background here. A few other things I will mention, that Megan arrived home to Christchurch via MIQ back in 2021. And so now she ended up in New Zealand again, and despite having a medical exemption, was mandated out of her job. And she attended the No Jab, No Job picnic hosted by Chantelle Baker in Christchurch back in 2021. It's amazing how time flies, but I guess that feels like yesterday. Megan is part of the River of Freedom film cast and crew. Incredible movie, spending most of her time now working to promote the film, which was released online in December 2023. And encourages everyone to subscribe to the River of Freedom YouTube channel so that she can continue to support the director, Gaylene Barnes, to make more important documentaries and stories about some of the many New Zealanders who have experienced harm due to the mandates and forced vaccinations. Some of you might know that we also interviewed Mark Lapwood, who did a lot of the videoing for that movie as well. Megan wants to live in a world with more conversations and tolerance, more acceptance and love, and a lot less discrimination. She's been editing a book in her spare time and enjoys volunteering at intentional festivals such as NZ Spirit Fest and Earthbeat. She loves reconnecting with the Freedom Keepers that she met at the occupation and attending the gigs of some of the amazing musicians who provided the soundtrack for River of Freedom, practicing breathwork, singing and dancing in the dark, and sending light to the world. Well, Megan, you are a bit of a trailblazer in this area because you stood your ground, you spoke your truth, you had to walk away from a long career. And we've chosen the topic, trusting your intuition. Tell me why this topic is so important to you.
Because if I didn't trust my intuition and go with what I felt my body and my connection to my higher power was telling me to do, I would probably be dead. Actually, I imagine I think that certainly having one of the shots or any of the shots for the COVID would have killed me or at least harmed me. So that's the first thing that I kind of think about. Why do you think that?
Are you super? You personally just are super sensitive in terms of your medical, yes. Or that's just your?
Yeah, no. So I've had quite a lot of reactions to medications. Mm-hmm. I have three different blood clotting disorders. My first blood clot was when I was 15, 16 years old, in response to being on contraceptive tablets. I got a blood clot in my leg and it went to my lung. And then about 8 years later, I got another blood clot in the back of my leg and behind my knee. And then another, 5 years later, I got another blood clot in my ankle. And so that plus, I've had a brain aneurysm. I've had all sorts of other health problems. I've had the brain aneurysm repaired in 2020. And so often when I've taken pharmaceuticals, I've ended up having a reaction to them. Mm. I'm allergic to hair dye. Lots of different chemicals that are in the products that we use, I've had reactions to. And so while I was sitting at home, about to be mandated out of work, having trusted my intuition that I needed to come home to New Zealand from Melbourne, I really felt the pull to come home. I sat talking to my doctor on the phone and she said to me, look, she'd already given me a medical exemption to say no to the jab, but she was no longer allowed to fill in the forms to apply for government exemption because I didn't meet the criteria. And, she sent me all of the information that she'd been given and said, look, you know your health better than I do. Of course, I've been living in my body. And so have a look and see what it is that you might be able to argue to get medical exemption from the government. And I was actually sitting in my room at my flat in Christchurch with my hair covered in henna hair dye because of the not being able to use proper hair dye. Mm-hmm. And I was reading through the list of reasons you could say no for 6 months before another type of injection would be available. And it said, if you're allergic to any of the ingredients, you could apply for an exemption. And one of the ingredients is PEG. I thought, gosh, that sounds so familiar. What is that? And I looked on the L'Oreal website and they talk about two different chemicals that people are can react to in their hair dye, PPD and PEG. So PEG is the hair dye, is also in Pfizer. So I'm looking at this ingredient and thinking, oh my goodness, after my emergency presentation in Melbourne to a hospital in Melbourne after dyeing my hair, having a huge reaction, my head, my scalp was all swollen, my ears were swollen, I had a rash all over my chest, my face, my eyelids, I was struggling to breathe, but didn't need intervention to breathe, but I did present to emergency several times. And at the end of it all, the consultant there told me that I should never come in contact with PEG again.
Right.
And so just knowing, in my personal knowing, I knew I shouldn't take these shots. And then here I am looking at the ingredient list telling me that, one of the chemicals is probably something I'm allergic to. So that's the first, part
so
of
did,
trusting
did
my
you
intuition.
Get them? You got the exemption based on that? You got through?
No, I couldn't even apply. So at that point, we then started. So my doctor referred me to some immunologists so I could go and get some patch testing done to prove that I was allergic to this chemical. Because, how crazy is it that I couldn't just say no because it felt like I should say no? So I'm having to prove that I have the right to say no using a doctor. And so this is a holistic doctor in Auckland. So because at this point I'd moved to Christchurch, she had to transfer my care to a Christchurch GP to be able to make the referral to immunology. I, at this point, couldn't find a private immunologist to assess me because they were overwhelmed with applications. And at least one of them had been mandated by the stage because at least one of them had just recently retired. And by looking at her picture, she looked about my age. I thought she's either got some fantastic dermatology support here or she's also been mandated out. And they wouldn't tell me at reception, but nevertheless, I ended up going through the public system and applying. And when I went back to the locum GP that I was seeing in Christchurch, and she sat next to me, just like two other doctors had said to me with their masks on, I've had two of these injections and I'm fine, which I think is an incredibly strange way for a medical profession to interact. I've taken contraceptive pill and I nearly died. So I'm not you. I have a very different body to the doctor talking to me, just like everyone does. And so this woman's GP with her mask on read out the reply from the immunology department and it said, Megan's unlikely to have a reaction to hair dye or to PEG. Just tell her to get the Pfizer shot. And if she won't, encourage her to get the AstraZeneca. So I looked at this GP and I said, well, my doctor in Melbourne told me not to get the AstraZeneca because of all my clotting disorders. And he had said to me, if you wanted to take the risk, you could try the Pfizer. And I didn't. I don't want to take the risk. That seems absolutely absurd to try a medication when I've had so many medical reactions to medication. So I thought I'd just take my chances and come home to New Zealand. And so this GP is saying to me, you know, she's read out the reply from immunology. And I also say to her, well, hang on a second, you've got my paperwork showing that I had a reaction to hair dye, that it was quite significant. And I am allergic to, you know, PEG. And the GP just looked at me and said, look, don't shoot the messenger. And I just, at that point, you know, this is November, December 2021, so much frustration with the medical system. And I just, I thought, this woman isn't the messenger. She's not a postie delivering a letter. She's a GP who has a, you know, an oath to do no harm. And yet she's assuming, because she's had no problem with these shots, that, you know, every single person in her practice should have them. So so at that point, I couldn't make any, I couldn't go any further with the application to ask for an exemption from, you know, the all-knowing Ashley Bloomfield. And I found myself on the convoy, you know, a week later, within a week, I was on the convoy. So that kind of all just fell away.
And what an incredible experience that was, which I'll dive into in a minute. But just going back to the, you know, I'm just the messenger thing, I wonder what those messengers as such, you know, would be saying now, because that was a few years ago. Do you think some of those doctors have seen the light as such, you know, have seen the damage done, or can, whether they acknowledge it publicly or not, but do you think that they view things differently? Because there, she's essentially saying to you, you know, maybe just give it a try, you know, take the risk, you know, these crazy things to be saying to a patient.
A patient with my history as well. You know, I clot so easily. And I also had, you know, I used to be really, really sick with migraines as well. So these were things that I definitely didn't want to come back. You know, I 25 days a month of having a headache until I started seeing a natural health specialist in New Zealand and stopped having grain, which was making it very easy for me to have a migraine. And, you know, learning a lot about the words and the things that we've lost touch with around our health. And so now I do, I sell vitamins. I work with people to help improve their health in a natural way.
Well, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? Because what you were basing a lot of that on was the historical experiences that you had, right? You had this when you had the henna, you know, this happened to you, the reactions that you had. So you're basing your decision, a very educated decision, on your own personal historical experiences. And it really was going against the grain. Did you get a lot of pushback as well from family, or was it mainly the medical people that were really trying to encourage you to give it a go?
A little bit from family. A lot of the people that I guess I used to be friends with, because they haven't stayed in my life since the convoy and the protest, there has just been such a big gap in the way that we see the world. And so if you weren't actively rude to me, which some friends absolutely were, as a lot of us would have gone through the same experience. You know, I've got a cousin who was just really awful online to me. And, you know, but I've got my mum and my brother and my lovely ex-husband. They all support my choice. But there's a lot of people that I've kind of left behind, because they did, at first they were saying, you know, Megan, we're getting this vaccine to protect people like you, because, you know, you can't have it because of all these health risks. And then it kind of changed, because I ended up, you know, live streaming with Chantel Baker, and I had some attacks from friends, complaining and saying, you know, I can accept that you won't get this vaccine, but I cannot tolerate your allegiance to the Bakers, which is quite funny, because, you know, I'm just, you know, these people that I've just made friends with, we just have the same thoughts around freedom and the right to choose, and, you know, being able to say no to a vaccine. And that's why we're all on the Parliament grounds saying end the mandates. And now you're kind of, these people were aligning me with, as if every friend I've ever had has got to have the absolute same values and same thoughts around a topic as me. Whereas I have so many diverse friends, and I still do. I've lost a lot of them because they don't want to speak to me anymore because of the vaccine situation. But no, I had the people at my work. I'd only worked there for 5 weeks. So I was a nurse for 13 years in Melbourne. And I had been quite afraid of COVID. I believed everything I was being told by the health service over there, by my peers, by my, you know, the people above making the decisions around our mental health clinic. So when I came home to New Zealand, I was quite grateful. I thought that Ardern was doing an amazing job at, you know, and had locked everybody out of New Zealand so that you could all be traveling around and living your lives away from the COVID that was spreading around the world. And I assumed that because of the ability to sort of lock down, New Zealand would then look at the science around the world and see what was happening, really look at what are the rates of death or injury from COVID, what are, you know, and what's happening in the countries that are vaccinating and how are those people handling it and how are the rates of COVID going there and the rates of side effects to the medication. But we didn't do any of that stuff. And when you've got a government stopping passionate health workers from working during a health crisis, you know, I was willing to rat test. I was masked up. I'd been working at work. So I'd been working in the clinic with mask on, with goggles on, hand sanitizing, and going home to my Melbourne apartment and wiping down the railings for our apartment. We were working together to keep everyone safe. And it just little things were not really making sense to me. And that just kind of snowballed, you know, the little things like, do we really need to wear a mask if I'm the only person on the street? And is it really worth a $1,600 fine in Melbourne if you get caught standing at a shop window for too long?
Because oh my goodness!
Exercising.
Melbourne was next level. It's so baffling, isn't it? Looking back and seeing how things played out. But I guess for you, also part of that was your path towards all of these new amazing connections from the festivals and the work that you're doing at the moment. So let's jump to the present and the work that you're doing at the moment around the WHO, the World Health Organization, and the awareness that you're raising with Sue Gray. Where is that at? What are some things that you would love our audience to know about that?
So Sue and I are working with people with New Zealand Rising in New Zealand and with people around the world on a project where Europe is going to be convoying to Geneva for the World Health Assembly's 77th gathering. They are going to be meeting to talk about an international pandemic treaty, and we want to say no. You know, it was hard enough being in New Zealand saying no to the vaccine and saying yes to my own personal choices when I'm dealing with just a national government. But if we're looking at a government that is run from Geneva, we're being told what to do, how to behave, how to respond to these, you know, pandemics that are supposed to be coming in a greater amount over the coming years, and disease X that they're planning for. You know, if I can't even convince my own doctor and my own government that it's not right for me to have a medication, then how am I ever going to convince a government that's headed in Geneva? So we need to be able to say no to the WHO. We don't need them to govern us. We need less governing, more people power, and more of us managing our own communities. So we've been talking with the convoy, so back to Road to Geneva convoy. They are going to be starting out on the 30th of May around Europe. They're convoying into Geneva over a few days. And Sue and I and New Zealand Rising will be supporting New Zealand's response. So that doesn't mean a convoy. We've already done that. We had such an amazing experience. It can never be replicated. So what we will be doing is encouraging people to follow our New Zealand Says No to the WHO Instagram and Facebook and Telegram page and Twitter, and sharing our profile pics as your profile pics so that we start flooding social media with New Zealand Says No to the WHO. And then encouraging people to just gather in support, have a bit of a street party with your friends, make it fun. You know, this isn't just about saying no to the WHO. It's actually about saying yes to freedom and self-reliance and taking back our power. You know, there's 8 billion people in the world. That's a lot more. There's a lot more of us than there are of the WHO and the elites that are telling us how to live our lives. So Sue Gray, and so of course she's the lawyer and co-leader of the Outdoor and Freedom Party, but she's also just done the Freedom Village book that's just been launched with Alan Simmons. So Sue will be over in Geneva for the convoy, and she is also going with Alan McLaughlin, who is from New Zealand Doctors Speaking Out with Science. They're going to be live streaming. They'll live stream to us. We'd like everyone that is gathering in the streets to live stream to our page, or just live stream to their own page, and share with their friends what they're doing and how they're celebrating their free, independent lives.
It's such divine timing for this interview, because just last week there was an event that RCR was hosting in Auckland all around The Who and some things that were just not being told. And that's the whole thing. That's the whole reason that RCR is here. We want to discuss things that people just do not get told. And I really want to honor you and Sue and your whole team for all of the work that you guys are doing, you know, in this space as well. If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Up Your Brave show on Reality Check Radio. And I'm talking to Megan McNamara today all about trusting your intuition and going against the grain. Megan, I would love it if you could share some examples with me and my audience of times when you did trust or follow your own intuition and where that led you.
Mm-hmm. Well, even just this weekend, I wasn't sure. I've been up north helping out a friend in the North Island, and I heard about the fluoride-free New Zealand case, and I felt incredibly pulled to come down here in support of that. And I knew that Sue and Alan were launching their book. And so I felt like I really needed to come down. And I'm staying with a beautiful couple of friends that I met through the occupation. And just, you know, moments ago, before we were chatting, because of where I'm staying, I have ended up in the house with Mary Byrne, who is from Fluoride Free NZ, and she's also from NZ Rising. And we've ended up having this fantastic discussion about the work we're doing on the road to Geneva. So it actually wouldn't have happened if I hadn't been in the right place, in the right space, sitting with her, and instead just gone along with, I guess, my feelings of what I should do, what is the right thing to do, in terms of, okay, well, I need to earn a bit of money, and if I stay up here, I could do that. No, I need to trust my intuition, because it is very much pulling me down to Wellington. That's one very little example about it. But also, like the River of Freedom, when I was working on that, I would sometimes, you know, our editing team, Gaylene Barnes and Jackie Ennis, would send me a picture of someone and say, have you got any idea who this is? You know, did you meet them at Parliament? Because we think that they might have some footage of this other person. And so I would think, all right, do I know this person? No, I don't, but let's see if I can find them. It was a couple of days later that they'd asked me about this man who was singing and dancing, and we just had a tiny little picture of him and some footage. And I showed up in Raglan and was walking down the street. You know, it was this really strange experience of having I had a fork in the road. I could have gone one logical way, or I could have gone to Raglan, which was my intuition telling me to go there. And so I did. And I'm walking down the street, and I look and I see this young man on the street, and I think, gosh, he looks just like the person that I've been asked to find. And I went up to him and I said, you know, you didn't happen to be at the Wellington protest, did you? He said, yes. I said, you know, were you moonwalking? He said, yes. I said, I think I'm looking for you. And, you know, we had a look at the picture, and it was him. And so we had a chat about his, the footage that we had. And so it was perfect timing for this conversation that I could have easily missed him if I wasn't listening to my intuition and going with that direction, just sticking in my logical mind.
Do you think part of it is the universe, you know, conspiring with you, right, to have us end up in the right place at the right time on path? Do you think it's partly that, and partly us listening to the nudges, you know, following the intuition?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think it's, you know, if we don't listen to it, we miss out on opportunities. And these opportunities for me are something that is, I guess it's something that I'm passionate about. I want to work on films with Gaylene. You know, being able to work on River of Freedom means, even though I lost my job as a nurse, which I was so passionate about, you know, I became a mental health nurse because my little brother suicided. And so I thought, well, there's no point complaining about a broken system. Go and help, you know, help them to make it better. So when I was mandated out, it was incredibly distressing to not be able to make meaning anymore out of his death and out of our, you know, past childhood experiences. So to then be at Parliament grounds and very much called to go on that convoy, to stay, to, you know, work with all these different people that I'd come across, it meant that I could then be doing something I'm just as passionate about. It's telling the truth, sharing other people's stories. You know, that we get so much feedback around River of Freedom being the story that was not told. You know, the mainstream media have told a very different story to River of Freedom. and to the people who come and say to us, wow, it was just how I remember it. You know, that is exactly how I felt when I was at Parliament. You know, you really captured it. So that is something that I can be passionate about. You know, all right, I'm not a nurse, but I am still helping people live their lives in truth and be able to show their families what their experience was really like.
Absolutely. And for me, it was almost, I guess I was really just pinning my hopes to a certain extent on the power of what that movie could do. And so I talked about it a lot on my radio show. You know, I went to the big grand, the event here in Auckland, because I was thinking, okay, if some people who didn't quite see, you know, the lies and the misrepresentations and all the things, if they see River of Freedom and they realize how something can be portrayed in one way, but actually this is the other side of the story, and they can see that with the protest, then, oh my goodness, maybe the domino effect of what that can do to open their eyes about other things that they've kind of been lied to about, or things that have been misrepresented. I really think that it does have the power to not only take the people that were there at the protest, because it was quite, I think, a bonding and monumental, like, mm-hmm. it's for everyone that was there, which was not me for various reasons, but it was like, it's like a milestone monumental moment in their life that they'll have forever, which is so amazing. But I think for people like me that weren't there, thinking if that can open the eyes of other people and the domino effect mm-hmm. of that for them realizing the impact of the media and how they often just show one side, I'm just so grateful that what the movie can do for people to take them back to at the time mm-hmm. and to open everyone else's eyes.
And I think as well for me, I was so surprised. I did think the media was telling the truth in this country. You know, I knew there were sort of things that would maybe, they would sway people's opinion, or they would, you know, the way they told the story was for a particular gain. But I had no idea that they were just honestly blatantly lying. And while I was on the grounds of Parliament, I had, you know, I just started live streaming. The police had just, you know, attacked people on that February the 10th, you know, arrested 122 people, some of them quite violently. That was a massive mm-hmm. shock to me to see police assaulting New Zealanders who were, you know, women standing.
So were you there? Did you see that with your own eyes as well?
Absolutely. I was at the protest every single day. Mm-hmm. I saw police attacking people. You know, I've had so many friends that I've made out of that protest that I made on the grounds who had bruises. You know, a friend of mine had a bruised neck because the police had pushed hard with their fist against his neck while he was locked in arms with people. You know, some of my best friends, some of the women that were held for 5 days without any actual charge, and they wouldn't sign their bail conditions. Mm-hmm. So these women and the people that I interviewed the next day after that Hold the Line Day on February 10th, they had just awful stories of the way they were treated by the police. And I had witnessed some of it. So that to me was really shocking to see actual violence in broad daylight. You know, you hear about stories of the police, maybe, you know, they go and arrest somebody who's maybe, you know, engaged in domestic abuse, and they might rough them up down an alleyway in the dark. Mm-hmm. And you kind of hear those stories. And I mean, yes, it's not in their code of conduct. But, you know, okay, I know that sort of happens. And maybe he shouldn't have been beating up his wife. And there's some kind of questions and some grayness there. But when you're looking at people singing Te Aroha mm-hmm. and singing the national anthem and Amazing Grace, all keeping each other calm so no one is fighting back, and the police are just diving in and assaulting them, that's shocking to me. I spent a lot of the time on Parliament grounds crying while I was mm-hmm. watching people be abused by the very people that I trusted. You know, I trusted the police so much as a nurse. I worked with them. I trusted them in my personal life. My childhood involved a lot of police calls because of my own father. And so I really respected them. And I don't have that respect for the police anymore. And it's something that they need to address, because in the internal review that they did, you know, they talked about, I think, 3 days of maybe inappropriate behavior where, you know, two people assaulted on the February the 10th, two people on the 21st of February when they brought the bollards in, and another two people on March 2nd. That to me is madness. I've seen them, I've seen much more than six people get assaulted by the police on those grounds. Mm-hmm. But what really struck me though is, so there was that violence, but then there was the media coverage of it, and they didn't mm-hmm. cover it honestly. And so the day after Hold the Line Day, I sat up recording on Chantel Baker's page, and I had a couple of women come up to me and, you know, try to hand me these biscuits. You know, food was scarce at this stage. We hadn't quite built the amazing kitchen yet. And so these women came up and said, hey, Megan, have these, you know, these Anzac biscuits. And they went to hand them up to me. And they told me the story of the biscuits. And what they said was that for, you know, the last 2 or 3 days, there'd been a man in Wellington watching his mainstream media 6 p.m. news report of these, you know, disgusting protesters showing up. Why don't we just go home? You know, and how we're causing all sorts of trouble to the people of Wellington and blocking bus routes, which was not true. The bus route was absolutely open until the police blocked it. We wanted that bus route open so we could stand and hand out flyers to the people traveling. So there were all of these things happening on the mainstream media. And this man was hating on
us. I think I just want to jump in because that's so important, that point you made, right? Because we get told, the public, we get told, oh, the protesters are blocking the buses. And you're telling me from, you know, you feet on the ground, no, we wanted the bus open because so we could hand out flyers. It was the police that, honestly, the way that they misrepresent, it's, well, we're used to it now. Now we see the truth. Carry on.
Yeah, because it was a big shock to me. And it's funny, my mother's always told me how much they lie. And I was thinking, oh, yeah, don't exaggerate that. Oh, my goodness. So there's this man and he is hating us. And on the Thursday, the 10th, he goes off to work and he gets a lot of live stream footage sent to him by friends around what's happening on the grounds. And, you know, as the police are arresting people and we're holding the line. And so he got home that Thursday night, rushing in to turn on his TV and watch what the update is on 6 p.m. news. And it was completely different to what he had seen on the live streams. And he was so, I don't know this man's name. I would love to meet him and have a conversation with him. But he was so, apparently so disgusted by the difference between reality on the live streams and the mainstream media coverage that he got up and started making Anzac biscuits, which I think takes some a massive, you know, you need all the things that go into a situation for you to be able to do that. He made hundreds and hundreds of little Anzac biscuits. And on Friday morning, he came in and dropped them off at our kitchen, which had been set up. And then he joined the protest is the story. So that man had a completely different truth until citizen journalists showed him what was really going on. And then it was enough to trigger him to say, okay, I don't want to stand by and live in a country where the media just lies for their own ends. So yes, if anyone knows who that man is, I'd love to say hello to him.
The Anzac man, if you're out there listening, get in touch. You can send us a text if anyone knows him. 2057 on the text or email inbox at realitycheck.radio. Megan, did you think we would be further than we are now, you know, looking back at the protests and all that? Did you think that by this time, right, so it's May 2024, did you think we'd be further ahead in terms of more people realizing the truth of things, be that Freedom Convoy, be that World Health Organization, or do you think it's these things just take time for critical mass numbers to realize?
I guess I did. I was hoping that we'd be further ahead. Yeah, it is 2.5 years on. I suppose while I was at the protest, though, I kept saying, I'm not leaving till the mandates are over. I'm here until the end. And then, of course, the police rioted on us. So, I did leave because, they kicked us completely off the grounds with so much violence. At that point, there were still so many people walking around wearing masks, despite the evidence. A colleague of mine, when I was in Christchurch, both of us had to go for a test to make sure that we could fit the mask properly for our work so that if a patient did come in with COVID, we would be protected. Mm-hmm. And the person doing the testing pops a big, a big bag on top of your head that you can see out of and sprays in some foul-tasting aerosol. And then you move around, and if you taste that aerosol, that chemical, you know that you haven't fitted your mask properly.
What a fun little experiment.
I mean, honestly, I wish I had pictures. It was hilarious. So I do this, but they ask him, try to make an appointment with him to do it. And she said to him, oh, now are you going to shave off your beard so that we can do this mask test properly? Because there's no point doing it with a beard on because your mask is just not going to stop any of the aerosol from coming in through the gaps in your beard. And he sort of said, you know, he acted like that was ridiculous. There's no way he's going to shave off his beard. So he didn't end up doing the test. He didn't need to. So, which again, these are some of the strange things that you start asking questions about. And then, you know, 3 or 4 weeks later is my last day. And I stand up in the morning meeting and say, look, guys, I'm out of here today. I've been mandated out. I wasn't successful in getting my government exemption. So I won't be seeing you after today. And he stood up and exited the room. He was so disgusted. And you know, this is a man that's so afraid for his health that I have to get a vaccine, and yet he's not even willing to shave his beard. So I look at that and I thought, you know, are we all, is everyone just going to stay in this kind of mind-numbing space where they don't really think for themselves? We've come a lot further. So I do think we've come a lot further than that point. Because I talk to people, I walk around handing out cards to River of Freedom, and I talk about this when I'm on a train or in the sauna. And what I find 2.5 years on is that so many more people are saying, what a load of BS that was. There's no way I would get another shot. There's no way I'm going to let them do this. Or they say, oh, my family member's injured, or I've had some injury. Or, you know, I talk to hundreds and hundreds of people at festivals about this as well, as they're, you know, as I'm volunteering at Earthbeat, for example. I'll be handing out cards about it. Mm-hmm. And I just, the conversation is so much better than it was 2 years ago. People are much more interested. They know that they've been lied to. They say, oh, we're not going to, oh, I won't be doing that if the government asks for that again. Well, now is the time to say no again. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to be saying, like, there's 8 billion people in this planet, and New Zealand has 5 million of them, and we need to say no to the WHO. We need to stand up now, because there's another kind of tipping point, where we need to say no, or they're going to start governing us, and they're going to start deciding whether we get to go on overseas holidays, or even holidays out of our little 15-minute cities, because they might decide that it's more important for the world that we all stop traveling and we all just, you know, follow those rules that impact our lives. That if the WHO get what they want, it's going to be too late for us to say no. It's about saying no now.
How can people say no? What are the ways they can do that?
So we have started some social media pages, NZ Says No to the WHO, and we're working with the Road to Geneva convoy to support their convoy. So they can follow us, Facebook, Instagram, Telegram, Say No to the WHO, and Twitter. And we've also got, we're just setting up the website over the weekend for newzealandrising.co.nz to have a link in there, so that if you want to know how to help, how to join in, how to say no, go and have a look at those pages. We'll be sending out information in the next few days. But the main step, first of all, is to change your profile pic to the same picture we'll be using. NZ Says No to the WHO, and let's flood social media in the lead up to the June 1st rally and convoy over in Geneva in Europe.
Sounds good. Congratulations on all the work you're doing. Well, first of all, I wanted to just skip back before and honor to what you said earlier about your brother. And I wanted to honor you for that experience and all the work that you've done in his memory. And I like to talk a lot about the archetypes. And it's interesting how, you know, in maybe previously you were in that role of nurturer and motivating other people, you know, to live life and get through their mental health. And now you're into this new area of your life as the visionary with the movies, with the films and the documentaries, and also the truth teller. And I love how you're going up to people, you know, you're starting these conversations, you're encouraging people to think about the truth and what we've been told and to stand up to what is not right. And I think that it is having a massive impact. If you were to truly up your brave, you've already done it so much, but even more, Megan, if you were to truly up your brave in 2024, the last few months of that, 6 months, what would you do?
I want to keep making films with Gaylene. You know, she is just such an amazing director, amazing person to work for. And we want to keep making films. Where she's already started out on a film called Heartache, which will be a documentary, not a cinematic documentary, but something that people can watch on TV or on whatever platform we could get it onto. That's going to take funding. So, you know, we've already been, we need funding, basically. So Gaylene hasn't taken a single cent for River of Freedom. She worked on that for 2 years, and it's just not possible to keep going without an income. So at the moment, the story of the story she wants to tell around heartache is about some of the people who have had heart damage from the vaccines. So these people, if you've been injured by the vaccine, I'm sure people, you know someone that has by this stage. These people are being ignored and gaslit by their doctors, by their friends, and by their government. You know, we're being told this jab is safe and effective. And if you say that it's not and you think that you have an injury, it's actually just all in your head. And, you know, there are people that have, there's all sorts of side effects to this jab, but, you know, to be ostracized even further from your community, especially people who took this that didn't want it, but thought that it was they had no other choice but to take it. And then, you know, lose their job because you can't work when you're unwell, or have their hours cut because they're unwell, or constantly on sick leave. Those people are just going through so much, and we want to be able to share their story. It's similar to, I guess it's them, their pain and their injury compared to myself and other people who said no because I knew that it would harm my health. I was pretty certain that for all those reasons mentioned earlier, I wouldn't be okay. So I said no. I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know how I was going to live my life without a salary. But I knew I couldn't say yes to it. Well, those people did take it and are injured, and we want to help tell their stories. So, you know, we want to make a little, more films. So I guess I was going to up my brave, finding ways to find funding, finding ways to tell more stories that the people want to tell and the people want to hear. And also one other thing that I'm involved in is ProFest, which was the protest festival aspect of the occupation that just came together so that people around New Zealand and around the world could donate money to the protesters to keep them there. And so ProFest raised $100,000 in that 3-week period. $70,000. It's ridiculous. You know, 3 weeks and $70,000 online was donated. And that was while there were pages like ProFest being set up with personal bank details for people, just scamming people. So we managed to kind of work our way around that. And we raised $30,000 through the admin tent. And this money went to pay for toilets, so many toilets, because that was the main thing that was going to stop people from being able to stay at Parliament. So ProFest paid for all the toilets at Cranmer Square in Christchurch, all the toilets at Picton at the sister camp there, and about half the toilets in Wellington, as well as a few other things like meeting places for some of the groups that came together to help run things a little more smoothly or coordinate a bit better.
So quick shout out to anyone who is at Christchurch. Quick shout out to anyone who is at Picton, stranded there on the other side, a lot of them. And of course, anyone who is at Wellington and all of those people who probably donated money or items,
clothing,
to be sent down, like gumboots. And
because that's it as well. You know, we sometimes talk about like, thank you so much to all those people that came, but there are so many people that were at home that couldn't, for whatever reason, make it. And, you know, they sent their love and their support, and we were there for them as well. So all of those people that supported freedom in any kind of way, we want to say thank you to them. But there was a little bit of money that was left over, and we have had the accounts done for ProFest, ProfestNZ.com, I think it is. And we will be putting up some information when any of us get a moment around how those accounts were done and our accountant's kind of review of the finances. But the little bit of money that we have left over has been used to host the peaceful picnic at Parliament every February 10th, because this day is so important. It is a day where we gathered and peacefully stood against a corrupt government, a corrupt police force that were attacking us, and nobody fought back. That's the day that I want to remember forever. That's the day that I met some of the most beautiful human beings in the country. And I'm so, so fortunate to have them in my lives and be able to see them when I travel and stay with them and connect. Peaceful picnic every Hold the Line Day, February 10th, is something that we'll be keeping on. That's something I'm just going to be keeping on working on with the team from ProFest.
Absolutely, to keep that energy, that positive vibe alive. If someone's listening and they themselves have experienced some side effects and they want to share their story in this upcoming documentary, which you mentioned, The Heartache, who can they contact to get in touch to share their story? How do they contact you about that?
Right. So follow our River of Freedom social media pages. So if you message us through River of Freedom on the Facebook page, myself and Gaylene are the people that monitor that page. You can send us a message. One of us will get back to you. Go to our River of Freedom YouTube channel and subscribe. It's free. If we have more subscribers, it looks like, then we have a platform to play our documentary.
Yes.
And there's options there to try and ask for some funding from New Zealand On Air or from other sources that that might be able to give us some funding. I know that's a long shot, but that's...
I know, I'm smiling, but I'm thinking maybe going forward, there is going to be a massive transformation, not only in the economy and the school system, I believe, but also in the media. So who knows? Thank you, Megan, so much for joining us today. Is there anything else you want to share with our audience before we go?
I just want to say thank you so much to RCR for being an alternative to that lying mainstream media, having a voice for people that have been so ignored. And we are a huge group of people, actually. Mm-hmm. We're not just this tiny minority. When you looked at the convoy and thousands of people that were on it, supporting it, waving it through, and then all the people that supported it at Parliament, we're actually not just this fringe minority they talk about. We're human beings having a human being experience, and we have a right to a voice. So thank you to RCR for helping that truth come out and that those voices be heard.
Oh, thank you so much. I think it's a lot of the same people, isn't it? Like a lot of the people that were at the protests or supporting them, now are in the audience or speaking their truth online. So thank you for being a guest today, for sharing your journey, for all the work you've done as a nurse and having the courage to stand up for your own health, really, and now speaking the truth and creating documentaries so more people can see what is truly going on. Thank you so much, Megan, for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. Do you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to? Either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We'd love to hear from you, so connect with us today.